Okay, so thank you. So last Thursday, we heard of Kensto, and he briefly mentions about the dynamics of the supersymmetric gauge theories in two parts, one dimension. So I'd like to extend the kind of theme today. So I'd like to give us the overview about the cyborg-like dualities in two parts, one dimensions. So basically, we consider the two completely different looking the UV theories, and then it turns out that they are flowing in the infrared to the same spoke of our field theories. And so the work I'd like to give here based on these papers with a collaboration with my students, the Chiung Huang and the Hyeongchul Kim and Kyungjae Park, and also the Hichul Kim, who was the previous Kias postdoc and now at the Perimeter Institute, and also Danton Kapustin. So basically the first thing I'd like to do is consider the dualities for the U of N, the supersymmetric QCD. And after that, I'd like to consider the UN theories with the more complicated matters, so including the joints. And after that, I will briefly mention about the SN dualities. And for that purpose, probably I should use the PowerPoint if it works. And so basically, the setting I'm going to start with is the three-dimensional. N equal to the supersymmetric gauge theories. And so basically this is the equivalent of the four-dimensional N equal one supersymmetric gauge theories, which has the real possible charges. And basically the multiple structures of this, this three-dimensional case consists of the two multiplets. One is the vector multiplet and the other is the chiral multiplets. Basically, these chiral multiplets are the same as the four-dimensional case. So we have this one complex scalar and the corresponding fermions here. And for the vector multiplets, one can consider kind of the dimensional reduction of the four-dimensional case. So for example, if we start from the usual n equal 4 dimensional the vector multiplets, which consists of the gauge bosons and then the adjoint fermions. And then if we consider the dimensional reduction, say along the third direction, and then one obtains the three-dimensional the vector, and then the one of the scalars, which I call the sigma, and then also the adjoint fermions lambda. So basically, this is the vector multiple contents of the three-dimensional n equal 2 supersymmetric gauge theories. Now, for the actions, if I consider the classical actions, I just borrowed from the Ken's the presentation, so I just copy his notation. So basically, what he wrote down is just some the gauge kinetic terms, which is given by where the sigma was explained by Ken, which is basically the linear multiplet, and then there's some user. The gauge kinetic terms with the gauge interactions for the scalar multiplets, the chiral multiplets. And then there are some additional terms, but most of the time probably we are not going to use these additional terms. The terms we are necessary, I mean we need it, and then I'm going to write it explicitly. So this is just for the purpose of setting up the notation. Now the one important thing is basically the structure of this, concerning all these vector multiplets. So if we consider in the 2 plus 1 dimension, and then the 3-dimensional vector is dual to a scalar, so which is given by the relation like the dIA is given by epsilon ijk of jk, where the ijk runs from 0, 1, 2, the 3-dimensional cases. And so in this case, if I consider that the flux is quantized in the generic cases, and then the A has the period of 2 pi, I assume that. And then now the peculiar feature of this, the three-dimensional case is that we have this the three-dimensional Coulomb branch, but now this three-dimensional Coulomb branch can have the two scalars, sigma and A, which is the dual photon. And so that means that three-dimensional Coulomb branch, in general, they are parametered by the complex scalar x, Which is the exponential form, where the E is appearing in this, the couplings, and then IA. This is rather convenient because A has the periodic structures, so we incorporate it here. Now, when you consider the generic point of the Coulomb branches of the moduli space, and then basically this, when you consider, say, of the U of n gauge theories, and then it is reduced to U1 of the n. And so that means is that if you consider this as sigmas, then basically it is decomposed like sigma 1, sigma 2, and sigma n in the cartons of the U of n. One important aspect of the three-dimensional gauge theory is that most of these Coulomb branches are lifted off. Because so if we consider this the Coulomb, and then most of them are lifted due to the instantaneous effect. So basically, I mean, this is the four-dimensional, the monopoles, dimension reduced to the 3D. And so when you consider, say, the SU of 2, and then if you go to the low energy mode, I mean, the effective actions, and then this SU2 is broken to U of n, U of 1. And then it is shown that one can obtain the superpotential due to this instantaneous effect, which is the 1 over y, where this y is analog of this x for the SU2 broken to U of n. Now, once we have this kind of the SU2 instantaneous effect, and then one can consider the various embedding of SU2 into the U of n. And then many of these, most of the Coulomb branches are lifted. And it turns out that still there are some remaining Coulomb branches. And then they are basically parametrized. So if you consider, say, the sigma is broken in this way, and then the remaining Coulomb branches, which is parametrized by the V plus, which is the exponential, sigma 1 E squared plus IA 1, and also the V minus, which is the exponential, minus sigma over N, the E squared minus I, A over N. We assume that there's some the orders of all these expectation values of the sigmas. So basically, those two are the remaining Coulomb branches.
But then along these branches, this W does not act, I mean, this 1 over y.
One over y?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, so...
Or it's a kind of different sector of the theory.
Yeah, yeah. So what happens is that, for example, one can consider the SU2 embedding into U of n. So basically, then one can consider the instantons, which is given by something like 1 over the exponential, the sigma 1 minus sigma 2, I mean, that kind of thing. And so then if you consider the root of this U of n, so then one can remove, most of the Coulomb branches, which can be related by the sigma I minus sigma j. So those branches are gone. And then the only thing remains is this the sigma 1 and the minus sigma n. Mm-hmm. Okay, now Ken also briefly mentioned about this monopole operators in three dimension, and also I should explain in more detail because it is very important to understand the gauge dynamics in the three-dimensional case. So if you look at, this kind of expression, then you will see that this sigma, basically, this is a dual photon, so it means is that this is the so basically, this is a scalar creation operator, which also, because of the, due to the relation between the A and the F, that means is that this one creates the flux. And so that means is that the role of this one, from the UV point of view, creates the magnetic flux of the unit one. And so, so this one, X, one can also consider the monopole operators.
I'm sorry, but when this SU2 part went away, this non-abelian part, it looks like then you are kind of, instead of UN, you have again kind of U1, right, consideration, similar to what Kent presented when you consider this Coulomb branch.
Yeah, that's right. So as long as the Coulomb branch is concerned, we are just remaining this one-dimensional Coulomb branch. One half is given by the V plus, and the other is given by the V minus. And the other, the Coulomb branches are all lifted, yes.
Right, so in this non-abelian part, in this sense, non-abelian part is not that crucial, again, because those operators were introduced, you know, in U1 case as well, right?
So you will see this, the U of N R on dualities, and then the details of dynamics are a little bit different, but as long as there's a Coulomb branch is concerned, then we just have this the Coulomb branches, which is parameters of V plus and V minus. But the details of, but I think U of N dynamics will enter later. So it's still different. Though, there's some seemingly possibility, the similarities for this, the Coulomb branches. Okay, if we consider monopole operators, that means is that this is the operators which create the unit flux of the magnetic flux. And then we assume that in the infrared, this flows to the X, of which parametrize the three-dimensional Coulomb branches. Now, it's okay for the abelian cases, then one can explicitly write these examples, explicitly write down the monopole operators, which creates the unit flux of the magnetic flux. However, because here our interest is most of the U of N, now it's rather the subtle to write down the monopole operators in the U of N. And so it's not clear how to do it in the general setting. What I'm going to use is that if I just consider most of the things I'm interested in are just the superconformability theories. And so for the non-abelian case, but somehow if we consider the conformability theory cases, and then one way of writing down this monopole operators are using the operator and the state correspondence. Suppose that if I consider the operators on R3, and then using this the radially quantized version, then this is mapped to a state S2 times R. And if we consider some operators here, then the conformal dimension, so that is mapped to the energy of the state S2 times R. Okay. So then the monopole operators is given. So suppose that if I consider, say, the monopole operators like this one, V plus and V minus. And in this picture, this is basically mapped to some the magnetic flux background where the U of N is broken, say, the U1 to the N. And so this one would be mapped to, say, the plus 1, 0, 0. Where this denotes the unit flux for the first of the U1 sector of the carton, and then basically the remaining sectors are just a zero. And similarly, this one can be mapped in this way. Now, the one good thing about this one is that if we consider the more general operators involving monopole operators, basically what we have to do going into this the radial quantized version is that we just consider the state acting on the magnetic flux background. So then it's much easier to deal with this one. Why, what kind of things we should do in this side is rather uncertain. So many of the things we'd like to do here is basically going to the states, the pictures, and see what kind of the states are there. And then we are implicitly assume that there should be some kind of operators in the other side, even though there would be no explicit expressions for that.
But in this sense, it's not Hamiltonian, it is dilatation, right, which you're considering.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Now, from this kind of operator state correspondence, one thing we would like to see is some important the aspects of the monopole operators in the Chern-Simon meta theories. So Using this state picture, if I consider the equation of motion of mm-hmm. this guy, then one of the, suppose that if we consider this matter is charged under the gauge group, and then the Gauss constraints for this theory can obtain So we have this kind of Gauss constraints, which means is that if we consider this a flux, and then basically they should match by the electric charge, where this the pi has some the charge matter. So that means is that when you consider the monopole operators in the Chomsky method theories, then in order to have this the gauge invariance, that means is that the monopole operators generally should have the flux creation operator times the charge operators. Or if we consider some process mediated by this the monopoles in the Chomsky method theories, that should mediate the flux changing as well as the electric charge number, the changing situations. So this one we can see, and later probably we will use this back. And the one other thing I'd like to mention is that when you consider the generic state here, or the operators involved in monopole operators, basically we should consider the state which has the U of 1 times the U of n minus 1 residual gauge invariance. That's I'm going to also use it. Okay, so this is the background which I can state, based on which I can state the U of n Aronyi dualities. So around the 1997,
But this it's also even so it's already kind of U1 projection or what I mean fields you are writing here it's not matrices. I mean this can be to say
which one?
It looks like U1, right? I mean so there is no group indices on those objects there here or there.
You mean here?
Yeah.
No. I think for the more general Chomsky method theories. Basically, you can generalize into the non-abelian situations as well. And so,
and how Chern-Simons, in this condition, there is no Chern-Simons parameters, right? It yeah. doesn't enter here.
Ah, okay, yeah. That's right.
Here, okay.
Yeah. So if we change the one unit flux, that means is that we should be accompanied by the k unit of the electric charge change. Okay, so around the 1997, Aronyi conjectures the following the dualities in 2 plus 1 dimension. So when you consider, say, the n equal 2, U of n with the user the NF flavors, which is the quark and the anti-quark, and those four potentials. And then he also considered the dual theories, which is the n equal 2 and the U, n minus n, and then we have the NF flavors, but then they accompany the additional superpotentials.
Is it n minus n?
What is that?
Is it n f minus n?
Yeah, sorry. NF minus n. And so one part of the superpotential is very familiar, user the mqq tilde. So I should say that there's some additional singlets where the m, ij. And then there are some the singlets v plus and v minus. So this superpotential is familiar from, say, the four-dimensional cyclic dualities. But because we are now dealing with the three dimension, there's some additional superpotentials there, which is the v plus. So here, if we consider the original side, one would have this the monopole operators V plus and V minus, independent one. Now, this one enters here as a singlet. And same as this the mesons, which are given in this way. Okay. Now, the special thing is happening when we consider the n is equal to nf. That means that somehow, in this case, we are dealing with the U of zero theories. And so the special treatment is needed. And so the claim is that in that case, this is basically described by just the gauge singlets given by V plus and the V minus and these the mesons, and furnished by the additional superpotential, which is the V plus and the V minus and the determinant of N. So these are the claims, and then he just gives some simple checks for this. So one thing one can simply check is the chiraling matches. So here, one can consider, say, the V plus and the V minus operators. Now in the dual side, these are trivially matched by the V plus and the V minus, because we already introduced the singlets, as we did for the MIJ. Here, we also have these mesons. And again, they are trivially matched by this the MIJ. Because of these additional superpotential terms, this the gauge invariant combinations, QI, QJ tilde, so they are the Q exact. So we don't have to consider this one. And similarly, here, this the V minus tilde and the V plus tilde, those are the would be monopole operators for this the U and F minus N cases. However, because of these superpotentials, again, this the V plus tilde and the V minus tilde, those are the Q exact. So we don't have to consider that. So basically, those are the chiraling matches. And but also, I mean, he gave some more additional evidences. For example, if we consider, say, the N is and f is 1. And then this is the case Ken mentioned last Thursday. So basically, in that case, one can also consider the moduli space structure. And then those have this kind of the structures. And so in one case, so basically, this is parameters of V plus and V minus, and this is the m. So for some, such simple cases, one can give some additional evidences. But other than that, because of the relative lack of the tools available, he cannot go much further than that. One thing I'd like to also mention is that starting from this n equal nf case, and then one can give the complex masses for the flavors, and starting from this guy, and then one can understand the dynamics for the case where nf is less than n. And so then basically starting from this one, then one can introduce the complex masses, and then one can obtain the effective superpotentials for this guy. And then in that case, what happens is that one can obtain the superpotential, which shows the runway behaviors. And so there would be no the supersymmetric vacuum, which is again quite similar to what happens for the SUN case in four-dimensional cases.
Is there enough
of
NF as well?
I said?
When you said
the
NF has to be a big
equal to
N,
for this to work, for this yeah, for these dualities work. But then from this one, one can just integrate out the flavors. And then from there, one can understand dynamics for the NF is less than N. And then one shows that the effective potential for that shows the runway behavior, which is like something like this one. And so that
you can be out, and that's different from the fourth.
But let's say we would start with a massive matter, right? If this flavors were with mass, right? Yeah. Then you can regulate this, right? Let's say that you, if you have analog of duality with non-zero mass, then you can diminish number of flavors by just increasing mass.
Yeah.
I mean, just to see how, you know, additional.
Right.
So then at some point, then even when you kind of made all some massive, right, something probably would remains even, you know, I don't know, what could be.
Right.
It would be not a normal duality, of course.
That's right. So in that case, I mean, the duality is not whole, but we can have this the effective description, those are the understanding of the dynamics for, say, the NF is less than n, especially the pure the UN case, we also can understand. Mm-hmm. Basically, it shows the runaway behavior. But I mean, it's not given by the dualities, but basically, the description is given by, again, the singlets, this B plus B minus NN. Okay. So then, what kind of the checks you can do it? So that is the localization of the business centers. So much of the further evidences for such the dualities are coming from the development of this superconformal index. And S3 partition function. And so if I consider this the superconformal index, and this definition on the S2 times R is given by minus 1 to the n, and then we have xj3 plus epsilon. So basically, this counts the conformal dimension of the gauge invariant operators with up to signs. And starting from the S2 times R, and then because of this the minus 1 to the f, then one can have the path integral representation for this guy along the S2 times S1 with some suitable boundary conditions S1. And then once you are given that the path integral representations, then we would like to carry out the localization. So what happens? So basically, I just show the basic results. And so because we have this S2 and S1, and so that means is that on S2, we can turn on the magnetic fluxes for the cations, for say, for the U of N gauge group. And then because of this S1, one can turn on the holonomies again along the characters of the U of N. So basically, the formula is given by the sum of this the flux vector. And then the integration of this the holonomy variables. And in the localization, there should be some classical contributions. But if we consider the gauge theories without the Chern-Simon terms, it turns out that those classical contributions would be vanishing. So basically, we are left with just the one-loop contributions. And so there should be some the vector contributions. Probably I'm not going to show that. And then there should be the contributions coming from the chiral multiplets. That's I'm going to show. So basically, they show the plastic the exponential expression, which comes from basically the one loop approximation we are adopting here. And for example, if we consider so the form of this F chiral is given by so these are the bosonic contributions, and then these are the fermion contributions. And you have this the rho of m, this basically the weight of the representation of the chiral matters. So for example, if we consider the fundamental representation, and then its weights are given by the m1, m2, and the m of n. And if we consider, say, adjoint, and then it's given by the mi minus mj, what are combinations. Okay, so given this formula, then one can just at least, I mean, expand this one order by order in x, and then check in both sides for the claimed the dualities. So I'm going to just show the simplest case, which is N is NF is one case. So the result is that the supercomplement index is 1 and plus 2 times x1 minus r, and then x2r, and x4r, and so on. Now here, I assume the Squawk's charge, the scalar r charge is given by the small r. So it's a generic fact. This is the duality, I mean, if the duality works, and this supercomplement index should be the same as a function of the R, where we take them in this one the arbitrary value, even though in reality, only for the specific values of R, the duality works. I mean, in the infrared, basically, this R is, say, given by this the F maximization theorems. But there are some deformations one can do in this the supercomplement index so that away from this one, the duality should work. And so basically, we have the expressions as a function of this x and also with arbitrary the r parameters. And it turns out that for the n equals n equals 1 case, those are the same for the all of the higher orders. So let me just show some operator contents. So if we consider the u of 1 with the 1 flavors, so this one is v plus and v minus. This one comes from the qq tilde and qq tilde square. Now if we consider, say, the just the gauge singular theory, which consists of the v plus, v minus, and then again we have a v plus, v minus, and then m square. One of the notable features of this supercomplement index computation is that basically this knows the chiral link structure as it should be. And then every distal chiral link structures should be consistent with the fact that for the Coulomb branches, we have just one independent pair of the monopole operators. And then we also have this the measurements. And all of those things can be checked, not only for this n is n f equal 1 case, for the generic cases of the R only dualities. And the second thing is that, for example, here, we know that the W is given by there is some additional scope potential like this one, which means is that if we consider the combination of the V plus and V minus, and then in this side, this the V plus V minus should be Q exact. So what happens is that if we look at the index computation, this V plus and V minus can be canceled by some fermion operators. And so basically, just looking some detailed structure of the supercomplement indices, then one can confirm this the chiral link structures of the underlying theories. But this one give rise to the far more refined information about the supercomplement, field theories. There are some cases where one can have this basically the identical chiral rings, but nevertheless, some of the theories give rise to different indices. So this the indices are much more refined tools to probe the dualities. And for all of this the R-only dualities, both these claims, one can check that the indices are matching. Now, for simple cases like n equals n f equal 1, or the slightly more involved cases, one can give the analytic proof. And the other cases for this formula, one can explicitly work integrate out this one so that we obtain some series expressions for this supercomplement index. And then given this the series expansions, and then for those two dual theories, they are completely different looking. However, wherever this analytic proof is not available, one can just expand the series in terms of the x, which is the dimension of conformers, conformal dimension, and then one can again see, I mean, those are matched against each other. So those are the current status of art for this checking of the Aronian dualities.
Can you write the Kuhn branch as a variety in terms of the plus and the minus? What is the full quantum Kuhn branch in this case?
No, I mean, if you consider the U of N, is this simply...
Just U1 with one.
U1?
Yeah, U1 with one flavor.
This is basically the moduli space of the Coulomb branches, I mean, with plus and with minus. Yeah. And then some similar, the generalization of that.
Okay, but then, for example, can you take, say, M to be non-zero vacuum average, so that this V operator would be, you know, massive, represent masses. So, I mean, to go to the massive phase, or it's not possible.
Yeah, you can, so starting from this one, you can consider some arbitrary deformations, and then you can certainly go to the massive phases as well. Mm-hmm. But once you, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Can you reverse engineer the vacuum moduli space from the spoken from Newton? In that case, you already know the moduli space.
Yeah, essentially, it's a mass consumable, right? Because whether M should be stay zero, or you can take non-zero M along the valley, right?
Right. But I think, I mean, for the spoken form indices, you just know the available operators. But then I think it's a little bit non-trivial to go. I mean, so basically, I should say it's hard. I mean, starting from the spoken form indices to reconstruct the moduli space. I think we know the basic operator contents, but the governing equations, I think we should think more. Okay.
Okay, so I have some related questions. So there are some people working out this Hilbert series and the things like that of this series. And then the story is somewhat similar, and then they could also try to write down the relations, etc.
But for them, it's only those four modes here. They cannot do
Yeah, that's right. So, okay, I see.
Right, I think the Hilbert series is kind of, I mean, so basically, here we just impose a full of the equation of motions, while I think for their case, either probably they just delete the D-term constraints or the F-term constraints. So it's a more, but still, I mean, in the case, I mean, wherever we have the dualities, it should work even for the Hilbert cases.
Yeah, I guess this is an index. So in some cases, there are cancellations between various modes. So
especially for the chiral primers, yes.
The full structure of the moduli space.
Yeah. In some of the cases, you can do it. Okay, so before going to the other example, let me just remind one important thing. So you will recognize that if you look at this, the Aronian dualities, then the pattern will be very similar to the four-dimensional cyborg dualities. And so one might wonder if there's the relation between the four-dimensional cyborg dualities and the three-dimensional cyborg-like dualities here. So this is work recently by Aroni and Razamat and Cyborg and Willett. So what happens is that if we consider, say, the four-dimensional, so their claim is that if we consider, say, the four-dimensional cyborg duality, and then you can obtain a version of the three-dimensional dualities. So all of the this kind of the Aronian type dualities can be derived from the four-dimensional cyborg dualities. So what happens is that we are starting from, say, the U of N with, say, the NF flavors. And then consider the dimensional reduction. But that the dimensional reduction is a little bit special. In the case is that we are considering the energy region where it is much smaller than the strong scales of the four-dimensional dual pairs, and also the compact Bayesian scales. So if we consider this one, what happens is that from this one, one can obtain the three-dimensional cyborg-like dualities, but that's slightly different from that RNA dualities. So what happens is that here, one can obtain is the, in one case, we have a U of N with NF flavors, but then with some additional spoke potentials, which is given by the V plus and V minus, where these are the monopole operators I introduced here. And so we have this additional spoke potentials, and then the dual side, induced from the four-dimensional theory, is given by U of N minus NF with NF flavors. And the spoke potential is given by, again, just the dual monopole operators, and then we have N Q to tilde.
It's probably also NF minus N, right? Or here?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I always. One way to understand the presence of this potential is that in the four-dimensional case, this U on axial, U on of the axial symmetry, this one is anomalous. While if you just consider user the three-dimensional case, then U on anomaly is, the U on axial is the symmetry. And so that means is that naively going down from the 4D to 3D, we have a mismatch of this the symmetric content. Now the presence of this kind of the scope potential makes it that for this theory, so we don't have this Yon axial. And so at least one can see that the symmetric structures matches. Once we obtain this kind of the three-dimensional the dualities, then one can consider some suitable deformations. And then you can obtain these RNA dualities. So in a sense, those RNA dualities can be derived from this four-dimensional cyborg dualities.
But in this sense, when you have this monopole kind of, it may kind of maybe wrong understanding is that in some way you have additional particles if you apply to associate this field with a particle, right? So you have this. Vertex type of particles,
yeah,
which appears in 3D, right?
That's right.
Which were in terms, and I wonder whether, no, I mean, what was analog of those in 4D?
I see. Right, that's.
Because they came from the, no, I mean, by your consideration, right?
Right.
Correspondence, right? One to one.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. How can I go to decomplexifying?
In 4D could be monopoles, for example, and those monopoles were,
that's right,
which are not present in 3D, right? So maybe it's kind of deformation.
That's right. So, right. So even though one can, in a sense, derive this the three-dimensional cyborg-like dualities from the four-dimensional case, mm-hmm, maybe the detailed dynamic contents could be different, because we know that the origin of this the four-dimensional cyborg dualities for simple cases is just the electromagnetic dualities. However, for these cases, there would be no analog of this one. Rather, in some of the cases for this one, one can consider exchange of this electron into the vortex. But there will be, again, though, no analog in the four-dimensional case. And so even though, this is a good way to predict, mm-hmm, or enumerate the number of the dualities in three-dimensional case, but I think, detailed dynamic content might be different from dimension to dimension. Yeah, so I cannot tell more than that.
Okay. It's similar in spirit to the things that Spiza then saw, that's where you put the theory on a circle and then you can get these.
Is this where you can try to associate something with something, right? When you put it on a circle, because then you see what happened with your 4D objects, right? When you go.
Okay. So then we would like to consider the generalization of these the RNA dualities which means is that we are going to introduce some more complicated matters. So, now the easiest example is again U of N with NF flavors, then introduce, say, the one-on joint. For dimensional case, in order to understand the dualities, usually we should introduce additional superpotentials. And one might wonder whether there's some example where one can have some dualities without these superpotentials. The examples I know is the following. So if we consider, say, the U of 1 with, say, the Chern-Simon level 1, the gauge theory with just one on joint, but not flavors. And then one can show that this the dual 2, the NP fields, these are the dual 2, the NP fields. And these prefields, say U of I, basically they are coming from the trace of X of I. So this is an example I know where one can understand the dualities without any other superpotentials for the joint. But other than that, it's not clear how can we go further than that. So aside from this one, so I just stick to the case with the superpotentials. And then this is very similar to the dualities in four dimension developed by the Kutasov and Schliemann. So in order to write down some of the dual theories, then we should understand these analogs of the monopole operators, or how many the independent dimensions of the Coulomb branches are remaining for these sizes, because many of the Coulomb branches can be again lifted. And now in this case, one can show that if we consider the deformation of this guy, the trace xn plus 1 by some low order terms of the trace xn plus 1, and then you can find that there's some the decoupled the phases where we have just say U of 1 to the U of n. So a bunch of this decoupled n number of the UNQ cities. And so that means is that at least we need n pairs of the independent monopole operators. So it turns out that for these theories, we just need precisely n pairs of the monopole operators. And so in order to proceed, then we would like to see how one can consider or construct this kind of the monopole operators.
But let's say if we will start with n equal 4 in 4D, and then kind of reduce it to 3D, it would be part of example of this type, right?
Yeah. N equal 4? Yeah.
No, why not? Yeah, n equal 4, everything is joined, right? So would it get this super potential then? Or?
But in the n equal 4 cases, we don't have this, the typical cyborg dualities.
No, but it's kind of.
But yeah, I mean, the
dual, right, in a sense.
It's a separate dual, that's right. But if we consider, say, just a dimensional reduction of the four-dimensional n equal 4 Yang-Mills, and then we obtain the n equal a super Yang-Mills, and we know that in the infrared, I mean, this is described by the ABJM models, the U of n times U n with the Chern-Simon level 1.
No, I just trying to compare what you're saying here.
This
could be applied, right?
So if we same the super potential. So if we consider say n equal 4, and if we have the three adjoints of the phi 1 and phi 3, and then we have the user the super potential like this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Okay, so how can you construct this n pairs of the monopole operators? Again, in this case, we should go to the S times R. Then, again, one can consider the monopole background like this one. And then the gauge group is broken to U of 1 and the U of n minus 1. Then the adjoint, so we should consider some excitations along this background. And so for this residual gauge, the gauge invariance, one can consider, say, x prime. I mean, that's x1, x prime. So this is the n minus 1 times n minus 1, the matrices. And so here, one can define the number of the monopole operators, which is simply given by the excitations of this x1 guy to the ith power for the monopole background. So this can define the monopole operators using this the operator state correspondence. One of the funny things is that one can consider this type of monopole operators. On the other hand, one can also consider, say, this guy, trace x prime, that also acts on this monopole background. So now one can consider, say, this one is just V0 plus minus. And so this suggests the following operator relations, which is, so if we basically combine this x1 plus x prime, that give rise to trace x. So which means is that if we consider, say, V1 plus minus, and then plus trace x prime acting on this monopole operators, so then this is simply given by just the trace x, and then product times of V0. So plus minus. So this kind of the operator relations, one can expect this kind of the state constructions. So it turns out that if we want to use this one, due to the characteristic equations for the x, this I just runs from the 0 to n minus 1. So this is the needed, the monopole operators for this guy. Now, I'm going to write down the generalizations of this one. So we have enough flavors, and then we have the adjoint text. So this then the dual side is given by the U1 NF minus the N. Again, the NF flavors. And then there are the bunch of the singlets. So MJ, which is related by the Q, the XJ, the Q tilde. And then because we are introduced the singlet operators VI plus minus, I mean, this is the monopole operators, then we should introduce them as the singlets here. So once you are given these additional singlets, and the slope potential W is given by trace YN plus 1. And then we have some then there are some the super potentials involving the monopoles. So these are the user the super potentials arising, say, the class of Schumann dualities in four dimensions. So we also have this the additional adjoint here. And then there are some generalizations involving these monopole operators parametrizing the Coulomb branches of a three dimension. There are some non-trivial aspects of these dualities, so I'd like to mention those. And then I'm almost done. Now, if we just consider the chiral map, the chiraling matching, if we consider, say, trace xi, And then they should match, say, trace yi. But then the number of this one is given by, so the number, the independent, the independent number of this guy is given by the minimum of the gauge rank n, you know, with n minus 1, because this gives rise to some the characteristic equations, and so this is reduced. On the other hand, this one is given by the n prime. The n prime is the rank of the dual side gauge group, and again, the n minus 1. So one can see that in principle, so we have these combinations. This could be different. But then we are a little bit conundrum, because if those are the dual theories, and then all of these operators, at least I mean the chiraling elements, should match. So what happens? So apparently, this the classical chiraling relations would not hold for those sides. But that means is that we have this the chiraling, and then this one either should be truncate or degenerate by strong coupling dynamics. Now. It is rather subtle to probe, I mean, these kind of possibilities directly, but at least I mean just looking for the indexes, the superconformal indices, one can see that this kind of the chiraling truncation or the chiraling generations can occur. So I'm going to show the simple examples. So if I consider, say, and then you can see some taste of, I mean, this kind of the chiraling truncation or the chiraling generations from just these examples. And then one can cook up many of the examples. Then all of, I mean, those examples, I mean, this kind of the chiraling matches work. So it's a very impressive test. And then these two theories are dual to each other. And furthermore, one can also compute the indices on both sides. And then one can see the matching.
Just to mention the reference, this was discussed in this paper of
in this the 90s papers, but I'm not sure, but I think, I mean, they claim that, I mean, the magnetic characteristic should be imposed on the electric side, but I don't think I don't think they give much more the evidences for that, but here we can do slightly better, because at least, I mean, just from looking at these indexes, and that those are matchings. And then one can see that, I mean, we give some further evidences that this kind of thing indeed occurs. So let me show one example. So suppose that we are considering this numerics. And so then one side, original side, we have U2. But in the other side, we have U0. So I just consider the trace X here. But we have this U0, then one cannot introduce the Y. So then what should correspond to here is the trace X. What happens is that in this case, the trace X is mapped to the meson and then the product of the gauge singlets, M0, V0 plus and V0 minus. And then one can see that this one and this one, the conformal dimensions are exactly matches, and then the other global symmetries matches. On the other hand, one can also consider the same, the M0, V0 plus, and V0 minus here. Now here, the M0 is now then replaced by this QQ tilde. Now what happens is that this one has the higher conformal dimension or higher energies than this one, because what happens is that because we are considering this U of 2, and we have this V0 plus V0 minus, that means is that we should excite one of the unit fluxes in one side and the other side, or U1 times U1, and then we should put the electrons here, And then because of the interactions between the monopoles and the electrons, they can obtain the angular momentum. And then this angular momentum increases the energies. So in the original side, if you consider the operator dimension for this guy, then this one is higher than for this guy. So here, basically, then this trace x exactly matches with this one. And so the, in a sense, one can generate the new quadrilinear elements from Mr. U of zero. And then the similar dynamics would also work in the other cases as well. And I think I mean the I don't know the details, but one can also explicitly see, I mean, they kind of matches and the similar matches. So each worked out in our paper. So for the remaining 5 minutes, I'm going to talk about a brief explanation about what happens to U of SUM. So in four-dimensional case, we think that the U1 dynamics is trivial. So it doesn't matter whether we are considering, say, the U of N cyborg dualities and the SUN cyborg dualities. But we know then from the Ken's explanation, even the U1 is non-trivial in the three dimension. And so then the patterns for the UN dualities and SUN dualities are different. Basically because if we consider, say, in two dimensions, U1 dynamics is non-trivial. Okay. Now, suppose it's that somehow if we know the SUN dual pairs, and then one can certainly know the U of N dualities. So basically because here one can just simply gauge the U1 global symmetries in both sides. And so it's easier to obtain the UN dualities out of the SUN dualities. But now, if we know the UN dualities, but then in order to obtain the SUN dualities, we should have the ungating procedures. And it's not clear how to do it. Now, for this one, I'm going to borrow the Witten's results about the SL2Z transformation of the 2 plus 1 dimensional compatibility theories with the U1 flavor symmetries. So according to Witten, if we consider the three-dimensional compatibility theories with the U1 flavor symmetry, or the U1 global symmetry, there is some SL2Z transformation. Now, I'm just quoting, I mean, borrowing the S element from this one, which implies that if we consider the S square, that give rise to the charge conjugation of the theories. So what is the rule for the S? So according to Witten, given the Lagrangians of the compatibility theories, and then you should transform in this way. So and plus the gauging. So what happens is that, so we have the Lagrangians, and then if you have the U1 flavor, the prescription by Witten is that if we gauge this one, and so then this A becomes dynamical, and then we also introduce the new flavor symmetry, which is the sometimes called the topological symmetries. Whose the current is given by star of the year. So that means is that if this prescription is correct, the S square is C. So that means is that if we consider the gauging twice, then we should go back to the original theories. So if we apply this one, now suppose is that if we start from the SUN, and then we apply this S operations. And then we have the UM theories, but then we should remember that there's some the Chan-Simon terms there. Now, for the U of N, we know the U of N dual. But basically, they are the same, the spoken for these theories. And so one can switch into dual. And there, one can apply, again, this S operations. And so basically, then we obtain, say, the U of 1 with U n minus n. Because here, this U nf minus n also has the topological symmetry given by this one. And then there, we should also gauging. And thereby, also, we introduce some additional Chan-Simon terms. OK, this means is that because the S square is a C, that means is that this guy and that guy should be related by the charge conjugation. But if you start from, say, the charge conjugation, I mean, invariant the theories, for example, if you consider SUN with NF flavors, those are the C invariant. So that means is that this one predicts this one and that will be equivalent, what they should flow into the same the spoken probability theories. And so if this works, then it gives us more examples of this Wilson prescriptions or some the three-dimensional spoken probability families, which has this the SL2G symmetry. And indeed, what we obtained is that starting from the SUN, and then we obtain this U1 times U and F minus N theories, and then one can compute this the spoken for indices or the operator matchings and something like that. And then it exactly matches. So probably you will see the difference between the UN and the UN dualities and the SUN dualities. Here, the UN dualities proceed very similar, like in four-dimensional case. But however, for the SUN, they have some kind of this system, the delicate structures. So that's why it is rather difficult to find the SUN dualities in three dimension. And so first time people worked out this UN, later one can figure out this SUN dualities. So I think this is the thing I'd like to talk. Thank you.
Yep. So you're talking about the duality with this adjoint X in three dimensions.
Right.
But there is also similar duality in four dimensions, which is the one discussed by Kutazov.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And then what happens if you take that 4D theory and compactify to three dimensions?
I think basically, in doing that way, you can obtain these two dualities in 2 plus 1 dimension. But again, probably, my guess is that initially, you are not obtaining these theories. With some additional scope potentials, and then hopefully you should have some additional deformations, thereby you can obtain this guy. If you look at the paper by this the Princeton group, they mentioned that they worked out these cases, but they wouldn't publish it.
So in what situations are either of these dual theories weakly coupled?
What's that?
Are any of these dual theories weakly coupled in some situation?
Weakly coupled? So in the 2 plus 1 dimensional theories, in order to obtain the spoken probability theories, we should go to the strong coupling regions.
So they're all strongly coupled?
Yeah.
Well, if you fix NC and take NF to infinity, then there's a 1 over N.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay. So in that case, what's the NC?
But say in 4D it was this conformal point, right? Near the edge of the window. And there is no analog of this in 3D alone.
There are, I think. Let me see.
Like NF goes to infinity in 3D is the analog of Bang's X in 4D.
Say it again?
Like in 4D there's some finite conformal window. At the top that's Bang's X.
Uh-huh.
A couple of fixed points. So they allow them 3D to see if they have to.
I see.
For the top end is just one window.
Yeah.
But the bottom end is not weakly coupled.
Yeah, right, but if you make it transcendent level R, it's transcendent.
Although in some cases it's free in some dual description.
I mean, with the transcendent, massive transcendence, you can have tons of weakly coupled CFTs just by making a transcendent level large.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can obtain the lots of the transcendent method theories starting from the U gauge theories and then giving some suitable axial masses for the flavors.
But it could be that you know, some kind of recoupling could show up when you consider massive deformation, because in 3D coupling constant is dimensionful, right? So and it gives you infrared. I mean, okay. But if you have another parameter dimensional mass, then you can have an analog of kind of dimensionless constant, and that could be in principle could be even in weakly coupled phase.
Now, transcendence level is an example of that.
I mean, that kind of is the central arrangement issues arise, especially if you consider, say, SON for the OON. And depending on, the gauge group in those cases. So we can consider, say, OON, the SON, the spin-N. Now, for all of these cases, the details of this, the dualities are a little bit different. But here, I think, for this one, we just have this SUN. I don't know how can obtain say for the SUN modified the ZON.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it should be somewhat, once you look at these kind of topological operators. Let's thank Jim Lowe again.